No, but I will try to do it.
Okay,
first of all, I want to thank Amir for inviting me for this presentation. And I will try to summarize the results of my past 15 years of research on the topic. So what I will show also comes from different papers. So I will try to I try to include the reference for each of them. So in case that you're interested, I can give you, so you can email me and I can send you copies of them. So basically what I want to present is what comes after preservation. So once we preserve a very nice or interesting plant material, germplasm, what we do next. So after that we need to propagate to make profit out of that, so to bring this product to the market, to the growers. And in this regard, plant tissue culture has been used for the rapid clonal propagation of plants, also the regeneration and multiplication of genetically improved or manipulated superior clones, also for the production of secondary metabolites. I will provide an example on this regard, and also for the ex situ conservation of valuable germplasm that the previous speakers has addressed before. So I will refer to micropropagation, which is a group of in vitro tissue culture techniques and methods which are used to asexually propagate plants. But we have to stress that for micropropagation as an industry, we should be very efficient and we should be able to provide plants or to produce plants in large quantities. So those are the two premises of micropropagation at commercial scale, which resulted in a growing industry in the last 30 years, where millions of plants are produced in on over 500 different plant species. But of course, I will not talk about the success. I will talk about the challenges of the micropropagation industry. And I think the main challenge for the micropropagation industry is to produce a large number of high-quality plants efficiently and at a low cost. And I would say, that the present limitation for the wider use of micropropagation at commercial scale is the relatively high cost per plant. And this high cost per plant is mainly due to the labor-intense nature of the whole process, because we need technicians or operators to basically handle propagate the plants, to cut the plants. So we say that about 80% of the cost of a plant is related to labor cost. So we need to reduce human participation in the process. Therefore, bioreactor technology came to our help with the idea of reducing, as I said, the participation of operators in the process. So by using bioreactor technology, we can reduce labor in the micropropagation process. If you look back in the first papers published back in 1980s and the beginning of the 90s, last century, a lot of groups were focused on the use of standard bioreactor technology, the ones on the bottom, to produce or to propagate plants, either tube multiplication or somatic embryo production. But these type of bioreactors are really high cost, so most of those pioneer works were only used at the lab scale, but never reached the commercial application. But if we focus on the advantages of bioreactor technology for tissue culture, plant tissue culture, well, we use liquid culture medium, which improved nutrient absorption of the plants. Also, we can increase the oxygen transfer compared to standard bioreactors. Therefore, plant growth is higher, so we produce higher amounts of biomass in short periods of times. And we also increase the multiplication rates, which is finally what we want in micropropagation. So a new concept of bioreactor called temporary immersion bioreactors, where the plants are not immersed all the time in the culture medium. So we have two different vessels, one for the medium and another vessel for the plant growth. So the plants get in contact with culture medium on intermittently, so they are not immersed, so we avoid vitrification and hypoxia in our cultures. And they're easy to scale up, and finally, we were able to reduce the cost of micropropagation. So there are two basic designs of temporary immersion bioreactors. In 1994, a paper published by a group in Montpellier, in CIRAT, They describe this RITA system. It's come from Spanish, recipiente inmersión, de inmersión temporal automatizado. They adapted existing Nalgene filtration bottles. So basically, in the lower compartment, we have the culture media. In the upper compartment, we have the plants. And intermittently, by air pressure, the medium gets in contact with the plants, and then by gravity, goes down. RITA is an excellent system, an excellent tool for research and also for lab scale. But usually, for commercial application, larger vessels are needed, because we need to produce larger amount of plants and also to reduce costs. So the cost of each unit is around 85 euros, so something like $110. So it's nice for research, but not for commercial application. So then the other system that we call the twin flask system, we designed this using existing vessels in the market, using from JAM vessels or polycarbonate Nalgene vessels. We're adapted for bioreactor. Basically, we have two bottles, one on the left for the culture media, the one on the right for the plants, and by pumping, by applying air pressure, the medium gets in contact with the plant and then goes back. With this principle, we're killing two birds in one shot. We're providing plants with the nutrients, but also we are changing the environment, the gas environment inside the vessel. So we are regulating nutrient uptake and also the composition of the gas atmosphere inside the vessel. We can, by venting the vessel, we can also very easily control the concentration of oxygen, ethylene, and CO2 inside the vessel. So it's a very simple principle, and since the very first applications, we were able to demonstrate cost reduction in micropropagation. So in pineapple micropropagation, 20% cost reduction was described. In sugarcane, we obtained up to 46% cost reduction per plant by applying the technology. And in potato microtuber production, up to 25% reduction. But I will show you later some other advantages related to the system. So here you can see the commercial application of potato microtuber production. We did it with two different, the first paper was published with using two different varieties, Atlantic and Desiree, very old variety. The process takes place in two stages. The first stage here is plant growth. It takes about 4 weeks to grow the plants. It happens in the light, in light conditions. And then the second stage is microtuber induction. We normally use high concentration of sucrose and dark conditions to induce the tuber formation. But the most important aspect is that we were able to increase the number of plants, the number of tubers produced per plant, up to 3 tubers per plant instead of 1 that we normally obtain in semi-solid medium. But more than that, we were able also to increase the size of the microtubers. So microtubers ranging in about 3 grams each. So that allow us to store the tubers till the next planting season very easily in the fridge, and also allowed us to transplant directly to the field, avoiding the production of seed tubers in greenhouses, which is the standard technology. So this the combination of reduced cost of the microtuber and the larger size, which allow us to store and bring it and transplant to the field, also brought another advantage, which is we can produce tubers all over the year, store them, and then we avoid the production peaks in the lab. And this is also a very important aspect in the macropropagation industry. Another outstanding example is bananas. It's also a two-stage system. We can here is the production of the multiplication of the shoots, and then comes the elongation phase. So we have been using this system for the mass production of bananas and plantains. You know, plantains are the cooking bananas. Especially a very nice application was in Central and South America to substitute black Sigatoka susceptible clones for resistant ones, resistant hybrids. So the technology was used for the fast replacements of susceptible varieties. Okay, pineapple is beautiful. This is exactly the same. It's a two-stage system, multiplication here, and then plant rooting, elongation, and then plants are transferred directly to greenhouse, and this is how the plants are delivered to the growers. Another application of the temporary mentioned bioreactor technology is for the production of bioactive compounds, and my colleague also mentioned that topic. And main advantages of using tissue culture is that we can control the production independent of the season. Of course, we avoid other problems related with natural populations and endangered species. I don't want to talk about that. But basically, using in vitro culture, we can produce the compounds in control, in independent of the season, the climate. We can also assure that they are pesticide-free, and we also avoid the risk of contamination or pollution. The main problem associated with the technique is that most compounds are produced by differentiated cells. And standard bioreactor technology, we only produce undifferentiated cells, I mean cell suspension cultures. So biotemporary immersion allows us to multiply or to produce biomass from plants or shoots, green biomass. So we use this in a digitalis purpurea, you know, this for digitalis digitoxin and some other compounds which are used in medicine to regulate the heartbeat or the rhythm of heartbeat. And just to summarize, we developed a system to produce digitalis biomass in temporary immersion bioreactors. And just to show you the efficiency of the system, by using 100 square meters lab, we were able to produce something like 350 kilograms of dry biomass, 7 tons of fresh biomass. In the field, you can only produce in 100 square meters 50 kilograms of fresh biomass and 12.5 kilograms of dry mass. So this is just an example of how efficient is the technology to produce biomass. We did the same in lemongrass, which is also a medicinal species, Cymbopomum citratus, and we also demonstrated the possibility of producing high amount of biomass in this type of bioreactors. And more interesting is in the following paper, we demonstrated also, we did the metabolic profiling of the biomass, and we observed new compounds which are only expressed under in vitro conditions, which are not present in plants grown on the field. This means that basically this type of culture conditions induce or enhance the production of some specific compounds. So we say that this is probably a new a source of new metabolites for the pharmaceutical or cosmetic industry. So there are some papers on that topic that we already published. Now we'll focus very fast in the recent developments in the technology. We have been using LED lighting to improve plant growth. And you know that basically we can combine far red and blue light, those who use LEDs who emit in the red and blue absorption peaks of chlorophyll A and B, avoided the production of white light, and this saves a lot of energy inside the growth room and at the same time AC, because they produce less heat. So we are also getting two advantages. One, enhance plant growth, better growth of our plants, and also reduce costs on the micropropagation process. So we recently published a paper now in February this year on the topic. Now we'll show you the new generation. I show you pictures that we adapted different vessels, existing vessels. So in the last 5 years, we focus on the development of vessels specifically designed for temporary immersion bioreactor technology. So we came with this system we call CERIS. It's now commercially available by a company in Belgium, Vervit. And it's a compact and modular system, you can see, very nice. They're stackable, it's like a Lego system. So we can have, look, if you look at this, this is a picture or drawing of a shelf. You basically use 100% of your shelves, so no shelf space is lost. We don't need large racks to accommodate the bioreactors, and we also save a lot of energy and space. And more important, they are standard. It's not an adapted bottle, so for many processes like secondary metabolite production, we need to standardize the production. And it's not only the vessel design, we also integrated a complete new control system it's a programmable logic controller. Sorry, there's a problem here. A pneumatic unit and also a proprietary network, which is used to control the bioreactors. So I want to show you just very fast some examples in potato, banana, papaya, polonia, and khaki. Well, I mentioned this software is web-based. It's very easily in your cell phone. You can check how the bioreactors are growing. You can control the whole lab, in fact. You can have data from humidity, temperature, lighting. You can also connect autoclaves, laminar flow hood, everything. Every single device in the lab can be connected to the controller, so you can very easily monitor how the whole lab is doing. It doesn't matter where you are. So we tested in different plant species, and now I will show you a little bit the integration of two different technologies, which is the standard bioreactor technology, what we call submerged cultures, which could be used very efficiently to propagate or to cultivate cell suspensions. And out of the cell suspensions, you can regenerate somatic embryos. Those are pictures of sugarcane. So we started from elementary flask cell suspensions, then we inoculated bioreactors to produce somatic embryos. Here are the pictures of the somatic embryos. And then this bioreactor, or the content of this bioreactor, is pumped into temporary immersion bioreactor for somatic embryo germination and the production of plantlets. So here we are seeing the integration of two different technologies into one single propagation system. Right now, in our laboratory at the Tropical Research and Educational Center in Homestead, University of Florida, we install a new SETIS unit of 32 bioreactors, and we are mainly focused right now in ornamental bananas, orchids, coconut to propagate lethal yellowing resistant plants, sugarcane, pineapples, and a very interesting application should be also the propagation of citrus rootstocks. So basically that's what we have done.
Questions for Dr. Jimenez?
How do you control like contamination?
No.
I hear contamination is a problem for TIS.
Yes. I think the main problem with associated with contamination in bioreactors is the lack of quality control measures inside your laboratory. That's all. You have to be secured that the inoculum you are using is free of contaminants. That's all. After that, the whole process is designed to keep the contaminants out of the bioreactor. So all the connections in the bioreactors, you use filters to connect one bioreactor to the other. Also for air in, air out, everything is a loop, is a closed system. So we basically avoid any contamination during the bioreactor part of the process. Basically, if you don't bring contaminants in your cultures, there should be no problem. Well, that's another possibility. In some plants, we already, well, it's not part of this, but if you already know which are the main endogenous contaminants, you can perform some tests for them, specific tests to check for endogenous contaminations. I mean, Bacillus subtilis is a nice example of this, but there are some PCR methods to easily check for the presence of Bacillus subtilis, and then you're secure that your inoculum is free of contaminants. Also, you should avoid any stress in the bioreactor. Usually when you have stress, you stress the plants, and then contaminants normally grow in the culture media as a result.
Is this experimental or is this in practice?
It's in practice. It's already in practice. There are several plant species which are now commercially propagated. I show you bananas. This is commercial. Those are pictures from commercial labs. In bananas, in potato, in sugar cane. But in coffee, for the propagation of coffee rootstocks, they use also temporary immersion bioreactors to germinate somatic embryos. There's a nice program in Costa Rica. It's been used in... Yes. So there are several applications.
Commercial
cacao, yes, for the germination. Not myself, not my group, but I know some colleagues in Mexico. They are germinating cacao somatic embryos in temporary immersion bioreactors.
Coffee?
Yes, they do now. Yes, in Costa Rica, they are doing. Yes.
covering the most critical stage of the
problems? Yes, I didn't want to go into detail, but yes, what that we call the immersion frequency. The more immersions, the more nutrients you're giving to the plants, and also the more you're replacing the atmosphere inside the vessel. So for every plant species, or even for every developmental stage, you have to precisely define the frequency and also the duration of your immersions. There is another possibility with this new control system that it was very difficult a few years ago. We can now inject CO2 in the bioreactors. Yes, now it's possible by integrating different valves, because the most simple bioreactors, the first pictures I show you, is a two-valve system, one system to pump medium one direction, another valve to pump the medium in another direction. But now, with this new programmable logic controller and the new software, we can include several electro valves in the system. So we can independently regulate nutrient and gas atmosphere. So we can even gas between immersions. So to have separate, we separate basically what's nutrient and what's gas composition. So we can regulate both independently, plus lighting. You know, there are a lot of similarities. Of course, we're not talking here about cells. Well, those are shoots or roots. We have been using the system just for roots by Agrobacterium rhizogenesis infected tissues. But in fact, for standard submerged cultures, mammalian and plant cells, they're very similar. They share a lot of similarities compared to microbial cultures. So they have exactly the same chair stress sensitivity. So they're very sensitive to chair, I mean mixing. Also pH, extremely sensitive, and gas. Yes, in standard bioreactors for mammalian or plant cell culture, I mean submerged, they also have independent control systems for chairing, for mixing, and for oxygen. You can control oxygen, CO2. You can even mix nitrogen with air to reduce the amount of oxygen. We can even produce, we can have lower oxygen concentration than in air. You can drop down to 2, 3, 4, 5% just to stress or to... We have some publications in somatic embryos, coffee somatic embryos, where embryo maturation is enhanced when we reduce oxygen concentration in the bioreactor. And maybe what we are doing is mimicking what happens in the seed. As long as the embryo is maturing in a normal seed, oxygen concentration is reduced because the seed is more compact, so it's sealed. So you have respiration, then oxygen is consumed and is released, and CO2 is released. So in a bioreactor, you can mimic exactly what happens in nature. So I didn't want to talk about the quality of the plants, which is another aspect that we can improve in the system.
Bioreactor with stage 2, so you start your stage 1 in a regular other
bacteria,
and then once you get that contamination free, and then you get into the
exactly.
Stage 2.
In some plants, you can even include what we call a stage to test for your plants that are contaminant free. So you can do it in liquid cultures in the shaker to test. So the contaminants, they grow faster in a liquid culture, in a shaker, and then you inoculate the bioreactor out of your shaker cultures. It's another possibility. It depends on the plant. The protocols, I mean, if you want more details, I can send you the publications. We did it. You can produce your inoculum in the shaker, if you want, instead of agar culture. Yes, liquid media.
What kind of media?
Oh, depends on the plant. But basically, yes, MS is the base for most of them. And usually for plant propagation, I mean for multiplication stage, we use cytokinins like BAP or kinetin. And for root induction, well, it's easy for elongation and root induction just by eliminating the cytokinins in the media, you get plant growth and root formation. In some recalcitrant species, you have to add annosine. It's interesting, your question, but we have seen in bioreactors that we can reduce the concentration of cytokinins to induce shoot formation. And maybe because of the plants are moving inside the bioreactors, they lose this signal of up and down. And you know the auxins have a polar movement. So as they are checking inside the bioreactor, this polar movement is lost, and somehow we get more shoots using the same cytokine in concentration. It's a side effect that we observe in some plant species. Was not the objective, but was a nice effect.
I would like to open this. Thank you very much, Dr. Jimenez. I would like to open this set of questions to the previous speakers, include them as well, to Dr. Amir or Dr. Wagner. Any questions on their presentations? Or any comments? You want to add something else to what you already said?
I would like to thank you for all of your help to me and during the invitation and also the progress of this workshop and also the speakers who accepted my invitation. Hopefully we will have another workshop next year with more speakers and also some hands-on work.
Well, this has been a very interesting topic. Let me share with you. This working group has been having several workshops, but primarily on transplants and other aspects. So we came back and did something on seed, and I think this was a great idea, and it was very interesting. And I really encourage you to come back to the business meeting at 12:15. Don't go away. Hopefully some of you come back. We would love to have you at the business meeting right here. Thank you very much, and thank you for Dr. Amir for coordinating the workshop. Thank you.